something well known to you. And you cannot say that this body is the real self. It is a false self. We have seen through our analysis of the three states of consciousness, waking, dream and sleep, that our real self is indicated in our condition of sleep, and it is not this physical body anymore. One day it has to be cast off also. We die physically, and still we continue to exist. Now, in a similar manner, as you exercised discrimination and understanding in respect of the external self, you have to do something with this self, this bodily self also. It has to be handled in a particular manner. With your detachment or non-attachment to things outside, that disharmony that existed earlier between you and the world outside has been eliminated almost. Now, the disharmony that is between this body and the world of nature also has to be looked after. We felt that this external self is mainly a kind of psychological self. Friendship, love, hatred, wealth, position, these are all only ideas in the head. They don't exist physically outside. Yet they harass you very much. This body is of a different characteristic. It is made up of the five elements. Earth, water, fire, air and ether constitute the building bricks, the substance of every formation in this world, including our own body. In a cosmic sense, you may say even this body is a kind of thought. But that is too much to think like that. You must go slowly. It is more difficult to handle the body than the world of relations outside. You can make adjustments with the world, but you cannot make any adjustment with this body. It has its own self. Now, the problem with this body is, it is considered as an independent entity, outside, as it were, the world of nature, which is made up of the five elements, earth, water, fire, air and ether, notwithstanding the fact that it is not outside nature. The building is not outside the bricks. The brick and the building are inseparable. Why is it that you consider your body as independent of the external world of nature, though it is made up of the same substance as the world outside? It is the intense affirmation of consciousness in a particular location. Desires, which are the forces generated by a particular affirmation of consciousness, causes gravitation of particles of matter around itself, and the formation of the body ensues. This body is a shape taken by particles of matter due to the attraction or the gravitational pull of the desireful affirmation of a center of consciousness, which is called the ego or jiva, as you call it. Otherwise, there is no reason for believing that the body is existing totally outside nature. We cannot feel ourselves in harmony with the trends of nature. There are seasons changing. We cannot accommodate ourselves with the change of seasons. We feel very uncomfortable. If it is raining also, it doesn't, we don't like. If it is hot also, it is no good. If it is cold also, it is not good. If it blows also, it is no good. Nothing is good for us. The body cannot accustom itself to these conditions. There are various laws of nature which the body does not always follow. Persons who are acquainted with the system of natural healing or naturopathy, know something about how natural laws operate in the world and how we live an unnatural life. We fall sick for various reasons, psychologically as well as naturally. The yoga technique prescribes certain methods of adjustment of the body with the world of nature. There are various methods. One of them is the well-known system of the practice of yoga exercises, yoga asanas. You all know yoga asanas. You do exercises every day. But you must do it as yoga, not as an exercise. It is not a game. It is not a PTI that you are performing. Yoga exercises, these asanas, become yoga only under certain conditions. Otherwise, they become mere exercises, like football, cricket, and all that. How do physical exercises become yoga? Because you said that yoga is union with reality. What kind of union with reality is possible by the exercise of the limbs or the physical body? There are various answers to this question. Firstly, you must realize that you are an individual who is psychophysical, mind and body complex. The so-called person that you are is a very interesting blend of mind and body, thought and physicality, idea and form. You cannot be simply body without the mind, nor are you merely the mind without the body. You can very well appreciate the effect of mind on the body when you consider mental disturbances having impact on the body. When you are grief-stricken, when you are bereaved, when you have lost all property, when life is at stake, see how thoughts affect the body. You can be physically sick. Intense thought of whatever nature can have such an effect upon the physiological system that it will look as if the body is crumbling. People who are grief-stricken do not eat for many days. Why should you not eat? The eating is done by the body. The mind is not eating. But the mind says you should not eat. It has got a control and authority over the body. You have lost all your wealth in 1 second. In stock market, what will you do? You will go and lie down as if you are dead. Why should you physically lie down? When the body is perfectly alright, the mind tells you, no, don't do anything, you are finished. The mind is telling the body that you are finished, and it says, I will not eat, I will lie down. This is some example of how the mind can affect the body, showing how intimately mind is connected with the body. Similarly, the other way around, the body can affect the mind also. Suppose you inhale chloroform or some anesthetic has been injected into your body, the mind ceases thinking. You are unconscious. Chemical changes in the system can bring about psychological changes. So body can influence the mind, and the mind can influence the body. That is to say, you are a beautiful blend of physicality and mentality, form and idea. So when you do yoga exercises, who is doing the exercise? It is very important to remember this point, especially as exercises are supposed to be union with reality. What reality? In these earlier stages, it goes without saying that the body, being a part and parcel of the physical world of nature, has to be set in tune with it. There is physical disbalance, mostly in people, and physiological functions do not take place in the manner they ought to really take place. You have some kind of complaint from some part of the body. There is no adjustment of the parts of the physiological system. Either you cannot breathe, or you cannot think, or you sneeze, or you get stomachache, or something like that. And in the same way as the mind has such a connection with the body, there is another thing which also has a connection with the body, which is called prana. Your breathing process also has a tremendous influence on the physical conditions and incidentally on the mental condition also. The prana flows through the nerves of the body, nadis or fine nerve currents, keeping you feel alive as a whole person, because the prana pervades the whole body right from the toe to the center of the head. The body by itself is a corpse, it has no life. It is the prana that makes you feel that there is life in the body. Just as an iron rod becomes hot due to the fire that passes through it, but the rod itself is not hot. When you touch a heated iron rod, you say, oh, iron rod burnt my finger. What has burnt you is not the iron rod, but the fire in it. Likewise, the prana pervading the entire body up to the minute cells of the system gives you a sensation of equality, wholeness and feeling of health. So, three factors seem to be before us when we take a step in the practice of yoga. Now we are going carefully into the inner circle of yoga from the outer arrangements about which we discussed enough. Yoga exercises actually commence yoga proper. Asana is the beginning of real yoga. When you do the asanas, three factors must be taken into consideration: your thought, your body and the pranas. Suppose your mind is intensely disturbed for some reason or the other, agitated, and you are in a state of torn emotion. That is not the time to do physical exercise. You should not say yoga will make me all right. In that condition of the mind, asana cannot make you all right. It will make you worse sometimes. The mind has to be perfectly in agreement with the body. Only then the body can cooperate in the practice of this exercise. If the mind says, I do not want it, you will feel ache all over. It will not do you any good. Desires of the mind, which actually constitute the mind, have an influence upon the flow of the prana. Wherever your thoughts are, there your prana also is. When you think something, the mind moves towards that thing, of course. But more than that, and apart from that, the prana also moves towards that. The idea of the object creates a love-hate relationship with the object, and the prana energizes it. The prana does not always move in an equilibrium, a fashion of harmony in our body. We become old, we look ugly, and some part of the body demands greater attention than other parts. The sense organs demand a lion's share, mostly, of pranic energy. a particular sense organ says, I must have all the energy for me only, all the water should flow through my field, as some villagers sometimes quarrel about. When you go on seeing something with great attention, as in a moving picture projection, you don't hear anything else outside, nor are you thinking anything else outside, you don't know what is happening around you also. Go on gazing. The prana is impinging upon the screen. The idea, of course, is there. Or when you hear beautiful performance of music in orchestra, the prana also is directed in that fashion. When you eat a good meal and you are highly delighted to eat it, there also the mind is thinking of it and the prana also goes in that direction of digestion of the food. Any other activity also demands the movement of the prana in a similar manner. Inasmuch as we do not always think in a harmonious manner, our thoughts are distracted, the prana also moves in the body in a distracted fashion. There is no harmonious movement of the prana, it is everywhere in a jumble. Yoga exercises, asanas, correctly performed in a sequential, systematic manner, will act something like an acupuncture action upon the system by which certain knots in which the prana is tied up are untied and they are made to flow in an evenly manner. The yoga exercise teacher should know all these things. What particular difficulty a particular student has got. All students of yoga exercises are not uniform in their nature. They have mental differences, psychological differentia, emotional differences, even physical differences. In the earliest of the stages of the yoga practice, everything goes well. There is nothing wrong. But in advanced stages, you have to take into consideration these factors. Your mind, what is the mind thinking? If the asana is performed by the body, but the mind is not doing the asana, then there is no cooperation between one part of yourself and another part. If you are doing Shirshasana physically, the mind also should be doing that, simultaneously. The thoughts move together with the movement of the limbs. There is a technique which is Chinese and Japanese called Tai Chi. It is an exercise which is a psychophysical movement of the whole system, bringing about a kind of meditational activity, as it were, of the whole organism. It is something very beautiful. Tai Chi, they call it. It is a system of the blending of the thought and the body in a kind of exercise, which is, it is also a kind of yoga exercise. In a manner that thought, prana and the physiological organs are set in a harmonious movement. The point that I am driving at is, when you are engaged in the performance of yoga exercise, your mind should be happy to do that exercise. It is not an imposition that is inflicted upon you, and it is not something done as a routine, whether you want it or not. It is a very, very necessary thing, and the mind is happy about it. The whole point is, your mind has to be happy with what you are doing. You should not do a thing when the mind is unhappy about it. Oh, these are stupid and I have to do it. You should not say like that. I shall do it, I am glad to do it. It is good for me, I am happy, I am pleased. Then that exercise will benefit you. Even when you eat, you must feel happy. Oh, beautiful. I like this energy. Oh, this is no good. It's good. Like that, if you go on saying condemning, the food will become poison. Yoga asana is also a mental asana, together with its being a physical one. It is also emotional. Unhappy people will not derive benefit from mere physical movements. By a carefully ordained performance of these exercises, the disparity that is usually there between the functions of the body and the laws of nature is diminished. The appetites of the sense organs become less and less intense. Passions get subdued gradually, because appetites and passions and desires are the vehemence of the sense organs in respect of their attachment to this particular body only, irrespective of anything else in the world. The more are you concerned with this body only, the more is the appetite, the more is the desire, more is the passion and all that. But the less is your concern with this body and the greater is your understanding of its relation with other things in the world, the lesser is the appetite. You can get on with less comforts physically than otherwise when you are totally physically bound and want infinite physical comforts. Asana is described in various ways in such textbooks as Hatha Yoga Pradipika, Jayaranda Samhita, Shiva Samhita, etc. They are all good. You can have any exercise for the purpose of your health. But if you are serious about the higher achievements of yoga practice, you need not go into 84 asanas or 108 or 1008 and all that. For the purpose of maintaining sound health, a dozen asanas also will do. The aim behind the performance of these yoga asanas being the maintenance of a steady posture of the body. What is the steady posture? As I mentioned, the steady posture can be defined as a harmonious balance maintained between the physicality of your body and the nature's laws. That is one aspect of the matter. That is very important, of course, so that you may not fall sick. You are friendly with what is operating outside in nature and how nature works. In Ayurveda system of medical science, there are prescriptions how we have to conduct ourselves under different seasons. It does not mean that you should eat the same food all the 360 days of the day. When seasons change, the diet changes. The Ayurveda Shastra will tell you, like Charaka Samhita and others. When it is heavily raining, it is monsoon, there are certain items you should not eat, like yogurt, curd, etc. If you eat yogurt and all that, and cold stuff like that in monsoon season when it is heavily raining, you will have sore throat, feverishness and all that. There are certain seasons in which you should not eat pulses. You cannot digest them. In some period, the milk is not taken. At other times, vegetables with many seeds inside, like brinjal, should not be eaten. You cannot digest these seeds. You know, brinjal has got 1000 seeds. They cannot be digested easily like that. You should not eat them under certain conditions. When the sun is very hot, you have to behave in one way. When it is very cold, cold wind is blowing, another thing. When it is raining, when there is a junction of seasons like spring, autumn, when generally people fall sick, certain other things have to be done. An adjustment of diet even is prescribed in Ayurveda Shastra. And other things also are there, like your habits, your way of working, the time of sleeping and all that. We have wonderful sciences in India for even physically comfortable life, let alone higher things like yoga practice. The ultimate aim of the yoga practice as asana is steady posture. It is steadiness, harmony with nature's prescriptions, And basically, it is steadiness in seatedness. Yoga is meditation finally. A particular operation of thought is called meditation. For that you have to be seated. Why should you be seated? Can you not lie down or stand up or walk? When the mind is concentrated, the body loses the mental grip. And therefore, the mind will not pay sufficient attention to the maintenance of the balance of the body when it is concentrating on something else. So if you start standing and concentrating, you may fall down. And if you lie down, you are likely to go to sleep. So lying down and standing are not considered as proper postures for yoga meditation. Seated posture, asira sambhavat, is a sutra in the Brahma Sutras. Success follows from seated posture. You can see by experiment every day. Don't do meditation, don't think anything, but be seated at least. Don't get up and move about. For half an hour continuously you sit in one posture, you see what difference takes place in your personality. You feel a kind of tingling sensation flowing through the nerves. You feel a fixity of posture. And if you sit for a long time, you may even feel as if some hill is sitting. A very heavy hill is there. That sensation will fall. Seatedness is the proper posture. Various instructions are given for the purpose of maintaining this steadiness of posture. In the beginning, you can lean against a wall which is perpendicular to the ground, so that you may not feel the ache on the spine. Later on you can sit anywhere you like. You have a cushion so that there may not be pain on the knees. Physical steadiness of the posture is achieved by continuous maintenance of it on the one hand, and the entertaining of a thought also similar to it at the same time. Again the same question arises, the mind should not be somewhere else. It should also be in that posture. The mind should be concentrating on something which is steady. In one aphorism of Patanjali, you have this interesting prescription. Prayatna Shaitalyananda Samapatti Bhyam. It is a sutra of Patanjali. Prayatna Shaitilya Ananda Samapati Dhyam. Relaxation. Feel completely relaxed. Just throw your hands. Don't do like this. Be rigid. Throw it. And feel that you have practically isolated yourself from the body itself. You are not there in the body. This is a kind of relaxation method. Don't be rigid. Like this, you will not do that. Then you will feel pain. Effortlessness. Prayatna Shaitilya means effortlessness. Your work should be effortless performance. It should not be a rigidity and a pain. Then the performance is not a happy one. People dance and enact in drama theaters all spontaneously, not with rigidity and fixity. In a similar manner, let there be an effortless seatedness of the body. And the mind also is told to think of something which is fixed. What is fixed in this world? You may think of the earth itself. It is very steady. You are as steady as the whole planet earth or the solar system. Or the word ananta is used in the sutra. Prayatna shaitilya ananta samapatti bhyam. Think of the ananta. What is ananta? There are two meanings for it. One is a traditional one, another is a philosophical one. Indian Puranas tell you that a huge snake called Ananta with millions of hooves is supporting the physical world. Grandmothers even say that the earthquake that you have sometimes here is due to the tremor caused by the earth when this large snake shifts the load of the earth on the head from one hood to another hood. Then the earth shakes and there is earthquake. This is the old grandmother's telling. How steadily that great snake is positioning the entire cosmos. Some Puranas even say that the quarters of the earth, the eight directions are maintained in position by eight elephants. They are called Diggajas. These are all mythology, theology, Purana, whatever you call it. It is only to suggest the way in which you can think of a position to be maintained. Or Ananta also means without end, no ant. That is non-finite, infinite, endless. Can you think of endlessness? Think of space from all sides. Imagine that you are moving in space in the right direction. You are moving further and further, further and further, further and further, further and further. No end, the space has no end. You are moving to the left side, no end, no end, no end. Moving to the high up, top, no end, no end. Going down. Imagine that you are moving in all directions in space at one stroke. Immediately you feel a kind of fixity of your mind. All directions. You must think all four directions at the same time, six directions rather, the four quarters plus high and below. Endlessness from all sides engulfs you in such a manner that you have nothing to think. And there is nothing to think, there is fixity of mind as well as body. This is the way in which you can attain stability of yoga posture for the purpose of higher achievements in yoga. This is something to tell you about this false self, this body. I have not told you everything about it, only a little bit about it. This body is connected with the physical nature, and it is made up of the same elements as this world is made, and you have to live in a state of harmony with the natural seasons, etc. And yoga starts with yoga asana. Asana leads to posture of the body. This is something. But there is something more about this false body. It is not a solid stone sitting here, so that you can just take it for granted. The body also is a tremendous involvement, and it is not a solidity. Inasmuch as, in the same way as the relations of yourself with society outside is not one solid arrangement, it is a juxtaposition of various techniques of mental operation with things in persons outside, so is the case with this physical personality. It is not entirely physical, though it looks like that. It has internal components which are the reason why this physical body appears to be in this form. So merely doing asana may not be sufficient. Something else also has to be done in order to control this body. And when I say body, all that constitutes your
for personality. Your personality is the body. The outermost part of this personality is the physical body. But there are internal layers which Vedanta philosophy, Sankhya philosophy and others will tell you, the body of sense organs, the body of vital energy, the body of pure psychic operations, the body of intellect and reason and many other things. If you are ignorant of these internal citizens of this little world, of your personality, and imagine that you are only the solid body, you will be thoroughly mistaken. So now, from the outer world of social relations, we have come to the physical body, and now we shall see what remains for us to see inside this so-called individual personality. Hari Om Tat Sat.